You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Everybody knows what we is. Good morning on a Tuesday, halfway through May. Wow, where did May go? So welcome to La Maison, as they say in France. The UN's debating violence yesterday. This is just me. I'm not too sympathetic. The people that organized that, they got exactly what they wanted. And this is what they wanted. They wanted the videotape. First of all, I can tell you, if there's a day that you probably ought to stay away from any of that stuff, it was yesterday, okay? Because Israeli security forces on pins and needles, because they know that there are any number of groups that would like to blow up that entire event that happened in Jerusalem yesterday. So, and that's what this was all building to, right? And the people that organized it, I learned something in Iraq, and I'll dovetail this to talking about the elections in Iraq. There is nothing happens here by coincidence. If you believe in coincidence, you're a fool. Okay? They taught me that. Because you see things and you're like, hey, well, what about that? Like, yo, you want to know why you saw that? You saw that because they wanted you to see that. Okay? That's the only reason why you saw that. Otherwise, it would not have happened while you were in the vicinity. What? Yeah. That's why it happened. And so it takes you a while to kind of it takes you a while to kind of I think, understand that. And that the whole thing is choreographed by people who have stakes in it for a desired outcome. And so you sit there and you watch things, and it takes you a while before you say, don't believe your eyes. Don't believe your eyes. Right? So the hummingbird people, and I hesitate to even do the hummingbird voice, because when there's 55 people dead, it's not a joke. Okay? So, but the hummingbird people are saying today, you know, that Israel is so heavy-handed and blah, 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 blah. The people that sent those people down there to protest, the people that choreographed this stuff, okay, know exactly what they're looking for. And they believe, right, that this all furthers their cause. That they know. So let me ask you this. When you have the German Shepherd living next door to you, and you go near that fence and the German Shepherd goes crazy, right? Is there any that doesn't happen like on occasion? Sometimes he comes over to the fence and licks us, and other times he goes crazy. That tends not to be the way that happens. Okay? So, when we constantly go near the fence, and we screw with the dog, and we screw with the dog, and not only do we screw with him, we go out of our way to provoke the dog. You know, at some point the neighbor contacts you and says, your parents, and says, hey, could you keep your genius son away from the fence? My dog is going, and then your parents can have a discussion. Well, we all know that training has left, okay? There is no discussion between those who would sponsor those events and the Israelis. And the Israelis have every right to defend themselves. And so this is the dance that we do. And it's all choreographed to go where it is today, which is to the UN. And what will the UN do? The UN will vote to condemn, right? The United States will block it, and they will have their 55 people will have died. The whole thing is set up for TV coverage. Yeah, trust me. If you took the TV cameras away from that stuff, right, and you banned the media, right, no coverage. There will be no coverage. Guess what would go away? The event would go away. What's the point? It's not like we're out here exercising our constitutional right. This is a choreographed event for TV. Yeah, it's made for the masses. So, it sucks, you know, 55 people are dead, but Israel has every right as a sovereign nation to decide where they want their capital, okay? And I said yesterday, it's like Catholics of the world coming together and say, yeah, Rome belongs to us. What? Yeah, it's our birthright. It's our religion was founded there. So it's you can't set your stuff up there. I almost said shit when I was referring to religion, so I restrained myself. You can't set your shit up there because it belongs to us. But it's our country. Yeah, we don't care about that. What? Yeah, and you have nations of the world American presidents, how many American presidents said that, yeah, we will move our embassy to Jerusalem? My bad. No, we won't. That's American politics for you right there. So that leads to news. Just know this. The whole thing is choreographed. Those 55 people, their lives don't matter. Okay? Their lives don't matter. And they don't matter to the people that sent them down there. This is what they wanted. They didn't go down there to do a peaceful protest, right? They went down there to do a provocative protest to have the video that's streaming on your TV be streamed on your TV. That's, and so to what end? To a stupid end. Okay? To a stupid end. Because they could sit down and they could come to some type of agreement. But, yeah, this has been going on since I was a kid. And in my lifetime, it's not going to be solved. It's amazing, honestly. Honestly amazing. So I want to take you to one other story that is intriguing and talked about a little bit yesterday. And that is what's going on in Iraq. Remember what I told you a few minutes ago? Nothing is the way it seems. Okay. So, if you go to aljazeera.com, I know, you're going, what did he just say? If you go to aljazeera.com, first of all, you're going to see stories about the Gaza, okay? Okay, there's an article there entitled, Shia leader Sadr's alliance set to win Iraq polls. Okay. So if you, don't rely on American journalism. Don't rely on American journalism exclusively. It's not a good thing. So you check that article out. All right. With 91% of the ballots counted, alliance of Muqtada al-Sadr is in the lead in 6 provinces, including Baghdad. Kuwait is evidently going to introduce a resolution today calling for international protection of the Palestinians. Let me tell you why that the Arabs won't allow that. The Arabs will not allow that because, let's just say they sent some kind of peacekeeping force in there. They kept those two sides apart. Well, how does that work? Like, what good does that do? We don't have access to the Israelis. That means we can't do this kind of shit. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, again, this made for TV viewing. It's pathetic. But it is the way it is. Human life, as we know it and we value it here in the United States, let me tell you this, it's not valued like that around the rest of the world. I know it's gonna, that bothers you. Like, how could that be? And again, when this many people are killed, but, you know, cue the hummingbird voice. How could that be? How could they not value life? They don't. They don't. It's the same way the Taliban, you're not gonna grow opium. We told you to grow opium, but I don't have the money to pay the bribe to the police chief and then the district chief. I don't have that money. So I'm going to grow wheat because I need to support my family. They warn him, and they did a couple things. Pour boiling water on one of their kids or oil, whatever they had handy. We medevaced a bunch of those kids, then came back and shot a 10-year-old girl twice in the chest. Her life, beautiful little girl, didn't matter to them. Doesn't matter. And so, you know, the world's not like the United States. Yeah, go figure. So, yeah, so the people that are bringing you to made-for-TV events. Whatever. No, it's just sad. It's pathetic. But that's why Kuwait's, what they're going to propose at the UN that can't, you know, protect the Palestinians. What does that mean? Does that keep us, that means keep us away from the fence? Keep us from, you know, the video that we want? You know, sorry, that we can't have that. How does it get us closer to what we want? Because that's how we're going to get what we want. Okay. Anyway, 90% of the provinces, 90% of the ballots counted, to include Baghdad, Muqtada al-Sadr winning. Now, what's interesting is this, is you see articles written from the United States saying that, you know, Iranian, Shiite, Sadr, blah, blah, blah. But this is what's interesting when you read articles that come from people that have spent more time there and know more about there. This Saroon alliance of Shia leader Muqtada al-Sadr is set to win Iraq's parliamentary elections in a remarkable comeback. After being sidelined for years by Iranian-backed rivals. Well, wait a minute. Iranian-backed rivals? I thought he was Iran. Now, remember, this is not on the Chicago Tribune. This is in Al Jazeera. So they normally know what's up. With over 91% of the votes counted in 16 of Iraq's 18 provinces, Iran-backed Shia militia chief Haider al-Amiri's Fatah, which stands for conquest, coalition was in second place. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's Nasser Victory Coalition, once seen as the front-runner, came in third. Sadr's bloc did not run in the remaining two provinces. Kurdish Dohuk, an ethnically mixed oil province of Kirkuk. The results there, which may be delayed due to tensions between local parties, will not affect Sadr's standing. Reports indicated that Saroon, an alliance between the Sadrist movement and Iraq's Communist Party, won more than 1.3 million votes, gaining 54 of a 329-seat parliament. Saturday's election was the first since the defeat of ISIS. Overall turnout fell short of previous elections, with only 44.5% of registered voters participating. Turnout is 15% lower than 2014. Commenting on the results, Rend al-Rahim, former Iraqi ambassador to the United States, told Al Jazeera, quote, "The ascendancy of the list sponsored by al-Sadr shows that anti-establishment sentiment and anti-corruption have driven the choice of most voters." But according to Rahim, Sadr's rise to victory is also based on emotionally driven voting. Quote, "None of the lists had an electoral program that outlined priorities and a plan of action. All used vague terms to lure voters. Many of the lists also used populist and demographic tactics that played on the emotions of voters. The success of Saroon and Fatah clearly show that voters were ideologically and emotionally driven." And then the next paragraph says this, "Move away from Iran, comma, U.S., question mark. Unlike Abadi, a rare ally of both the U.S. and Iran, Sadr is an opponent of both countries, which have wielded influence in Iraq since the U.S.-led invasion toppled Saddam Hussein in 2003 and thrust the Shia majority into power. Sadr has led two uprisings against U.S. forces in Iraq and is one of the few Shia leaders to distance himself from Iran. He has instead sought to broaden his regional support, meeting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Jeddah last year. Because Sadr did not stand as a candidate and therefore cannot head the government, he appears set to play kingmaker. Even Sauter's bloc might not necessarily form the next government, as the other winning blocs would have to agree to on the nomination. In a similar fashion, in a 2010 election, Vice President Iyad Alawi's group won the largest number of seats, but he was blocked from becoming premier, for which he blamed Tehran. In a similar fashion, Iran has already publicly stated it will not allow Sauter's bloc to govern. Ali Akbar Belyadi, top advisor to the Islamic Republic Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, Iran, warned in February that he would not, quote, allow liberals and communists to govern in Iraq, in reference to Iraq's Communist Party. So anyway, it's interesting, because what you're reading in Western news reporting is that, you know, Sauter equals Iran, and the Iranians are saying, we will not allow him to govern. A couple interesting parts of the election are interesting. The majority of Iraqis did not vote, partly due to a boycott campaign spearheaded online by activists. Quote, participation levels were quite low because many of us weren't convinced that the election would bring change, said Ali Mahdi, a Shia resident of Baghdad. Saif al-Haidi, a 34-year-old journalist from the Sunni-dominated Anbar, agreed, quote, the boycotters were more than those who voted. This has definitely had an impact on results. So, be interesting to see what happens in Iraq. Now, let me tell you what's critical. So, ISIS in the rearview mirror, right? So what do you have in Iraq? You have the second largest city, Mosul, in ruins. You have Ramadi in ruins. You have Fallujah beat up. Not in ruins, but certainly beat up. Where does the money come? Write a dollar sign down. Where does the money come? And then put a question mark. Can only come from the Western, from Western back, unless you want to get in bed with China. Sauter won't do that. Okay? So, where does the money come from? It can only come from Western lenders. Okay? Russia can't do that. They're the size of Canada. Remember that. Smaller than Canada. Eh? So, where does that money come from? So, in order to rebuild this carnage in Iraq, what has to happen is you got to put some kind of government together that can sustain the peace in some kind of way, shape, or form, unite the nation so that you can get the financial backing, because you can, so you can show your, this thing's going to be stable. We're capable of doing this. So if you go down the road of Shiite dominance, what you get is civil war. Because although ISIS, the caliphate, and their territory is taken away, trust me, they're not gone. There's enough of those dudes. There's enough of those dudes still around that they will whoop it on. So if you have Shiite dominance without Sunni inclusion, you'll have what you have, which is the status quo, which is the Kurds circling the wagons up north, staying out of the way of the Iraqis, running their own show to a great extent. You'll have Al-Anbar in ruins, and you'll have bombs going off in Baghdad all the time, people getting killed. and you'll have no money for reconstruction. So, interesting stuff going on in Iraq. The money issue forces them to be stable. In order for them to be stable, they have to deal with the Sunni thing. Now, you can deal with it one of two ways. You can send your military out there, and you can go ahead and suppress them, which is the Arab way. The Arab way is not inclusion. They haven't met Tom Jefferson. Yeah. Who is this Jefferson guy? Yeah, Americans love that dude, man. Here's the American idea. You know how they would like, whenever we'd have a meeting, they'd want everybody to come to it? Yeah, I never understood that. You know? Why? Yeah, the people that don't even have a say, they were there. They knew not to say anything, but, you know, the Americans wanted them there. Well, in America, those people get to talk. What? Why would they get to talk? Well, because they all get a voice. What do you mean they get a voice? How does that work? Yeah, it means everybody's included, and they come up with a compromise, and they make it work. What? Yeah, that's how America works. I don't believe it. Yeah, we're not America. And honestly, so that's what they deal with. The way in the Arab world, look at it. It's the strong rule, right? If you're not part of that, you shut up and get out of the way or you'll be killed. So that's where Iraq finds itself. And in the midst of that, they have an election going on. But unlike the reporting that you see in American newspapers who don't have it right, Iran isn't exactly enamored with the power of Muqtada al-Sadr. We, of course, would not be. But the very fact that he's gone to Saudi Arabia is a lot more than any other leader in that country has done. Yeah, think about that. So, anyway, so that going on. There's one other story I want to talk about before we talk about the news. I need to get better at keeping the show on track in terms of time. And so let me tell you what we're going to do today. I want to talk about, the Japanese announced last week that they are developing ground surveillance radar that's going to be very powerful in order to take to Iwo Jima and attempt to find remains of Japanese soldiers there, which would be pretty interesting for a few reasons. I played some audio a few months ago of Japanese survivors from Iwo Jima. And again, I ran across it. I'd never heard anything like that in my life. You know, they came home and if they were found that, you know, your family's name could be stricken from the rolls of their city if you surrendered in combat. So you were because you survived by hook or crook, by fate, you were by nature dishonored. And so you live with that. And so they talk about suffering in silence, the plight of the Vietnam veteran, the plight of the Japanese World War II veteran. Come home, and not only are you guilty because, you know, the government led the nation down a path that it never wants to go down again, but you survived, and somehow or other, you know, you've embarrassed your family. Not somehow or other in Japanese culture, you've significantly embarrassed your family. So you never say a word about it. So anyway, so that all of that will come back up. And so it'll be interesting to see the Japanese discuss that. But we'll talk about that here. And then General Butch Neal is going to join us. So you'll hear he wrote a book called What Now, Lieutenant? And the book is fascinating. The problem with the book and trying to do an interview is there's so much incredible stuff in the book. that it's an amazing story. He's an amazing piece of American history for a variety of different reasons. One, he's, you know, part of some pretty critical events during Operation Desert Storm. And so, you know, he became a household figure during Desert Storm as he was the briefer. And so we all got to know Butch Neal. But to me, there's a couple things about his story and that I'll tease. But you know, he in the book, I'd recommend you. It's called What Now, Lieutenant Richard I. Neal, all right? Middle name Irving. He's not too happy about that. He confronts his dad when he and his mom and dad get into it when he's a kid. And he's sent away for about a year. His dad was going through some tough times, drinking, job issues, and stuff like that. So anyway, and that was at the age of 9. That's not your typical kid. 9-year-old step between your mom and dad and say, hey, you need to cool your jets. That's not typical. His father passes away when he's probably 14 or 15, and he goes to work as a garbage man. He calls it a trash man. Goes to work as a trash man and does that until he graduates from college and from Northeastern and joins the military and then winds up in Vietnam. If you listen to the thing we did about Getland's Corner, which is named after the company commander of India Company, 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines, in March of 1967, they get into a fight. And we did a battlefield study on it last week at a place that is now referred to as Getland's Corner in the northern part of I Corps up near the DMZ. And in that single action, one Medal of Honor and 4 Navy Crosses are awarded. I've never heard of one action yielding that number. If there is, I don't know about it. I'd be interested. If you know about it, I'd be interested in hearing about it. But his life is remarkable. Because he's a normal working stiff. That's what Neal is. Neal is a normal working dude. And through hard work, and he's obviously a smart guy, through hard work and being smart, and then having good fortune in terms of different people crossing his path and he crossing theirs who saw his leadership abilities and the fact that he wasn't afraid. Open doors for him. So you'll hear him in about half hour. So Richard I. Neal, Butch, as his grandmother called him, my little Butchie. So if you, the book available wherever, What Now, Lieutenant by Richard Neal. And I would tell you, I didn't know what to expect when I started reading it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it because he's a down-to-earth, common-sense guy. You know, he was the J3, the deputy J3, but the J3 was an Air Force guy. So he didn't, you know. So Schwarzkopf was looking for a brigadier as a deputy J3 that had ground combat experience. So they sent Neal, who had already had experience in CENTCOM. But remember, CENTCOM wasn't CENTCOM, right? It wasn't CENTCOM. This is our first foray into the Middle East. CENTCOM wasn't what it is today. Like, if you ask, like, well, what COCOM do you, you know, what combatant command do you know? And everybody's CENTCOM. Like, CENTCOM? Yeah. You ever heard of SOUTHCOM? What's that? You ever heard of NORTHCOM? What's that? You ever heard of UCOM? Heard of CENTCOM, though. That's where all the players go. That's right. So, but this was CENTCOM's audition. And he was a part of it and had been a part of it before. So anyway, but overwhelmingly, just he's a salt of the earth guy, right? Comes from humble beginnings, and almost a storybook life in terms of rising to become a four-star general. You know, and again, there's so much to talk about. I'll get him back another day. But he was only a general for like 7 years. You know, if you do 2 years as a four-star general, you'd be doing 4 years as a brigadier or 2 years as a brigadier. Let's just say you did two years or 3 years as a major general. That's five. Lieutenant general, 2 or 3 years. That's eight. And a general, a four-star, let's just say another three, maybe four. That's, you know, you might be up to 11, 12 years as a general officer. He did 7 years from the time he became a brigadier general to the time he was done as a four-star. So he was on the fast track. That's the same track Joe Dunford was on. You know, I want to say he spent like 2 months as a two-star. Boom, he was a three-star. So anyway, so you'll hear him today, and trust me, you don't want to miss that. It's a great interview. So with all that said, and before we check the news and talk about ground surveillance radar in Okinawa, the United States Marine Corps ban makes it official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to Glock. Yeah. Glock has a salute to veterans program. Discount Glock program. Memorial Day, Labor Day. Any honorably discharged veteran is eligible to purchase one blue label pistol through our LE distributors or sub D dealers. A copy of your DD-214 and driver's license can be used as credentials. Check that out. That's courtesy of Montana Man. You can thank him when you buy your discounted Glock. Yeah. So this is dedicated to Glock.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's awesome. Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran and you came home and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
When I hear him say, I have so much respect for those guys, I remember having Bob Nielsen on once. He a Vietnam veteran. And he said, you know, Mac, one of the things that blows me away is that when guys that I go to visit at Walter Reed or Bethesda, when they would say that he's a Vietnam veteran, they would all get up and shake my hand. And I said, well, no shit. And he said, what do you mean? Nobody's ever done that. Hard to imagine. Cloudy in 76 in Quantico right now. Mostly cloudy in 76 at Camp Lejeune. Mostly cloudy 79 in Granbury, Texas. I got a couple emails already asking about the gunner. Hey, how's the gunner? Gunner's still dealing with his headaches. So he'll check in when he checks in. So when I get an update, I'll pass it along. But, yeah. Sunny in 66 in 29 Palms. Mostly cloudy in 56 at Pendleton. Clear dark 78 in Okinawa, so it's warming up a little bit there. And clear dark 87 in Marja. Cloudy, 59 degrees at the home of All Marine Radio, the beautiful Newport Beach, Costa Mesa area of Southern California. Looking for a high today of 69 degrees. 69 tomorrow with cloudy skies, and on Thursday, 69 under sunny sky. That is the look at your weather. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines on our way to a conversation that you're going to hear with Butch Neal. And we're talking about a book that he wrote, At the Behest of His Children. Yeah. At the Behest of His Children. It's called What Now, Lieutenant? And he talks about a series throughout his life, hearing that question in his head when he was confronted. The other thing I think that's interesting that he and I actually talk about during the interview is, if you were ever around General Neal, Colonel Neal, or whatever, he was not afraid to get fired up. And I mean, I would tell you, he's a fiery guy. And so I asked him, how do you do confrontation and survive as a fiery guy. And he talked about how you do it. But it's an interesting part of his leadership style. He's a smart guy, but he knew how to make it good. He knew how to win. And so, interesting. All right, we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio on Tuesday coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It'll be kind of like being a pilot. You'll come out of college and you want a cyber guarantee. And we'll give you a cyber guarantee.
Great.
And then if you make it through the school, then you'll get qualified and that's what you'll go do. If you don't, then we'll
room in the grunt.
Make you an infantry officer.
Worked okay for you and
worked
me.
Out for you. Of course, everyone knows that the most intelligent, handsome people on the earth are infantry officers.
As this would convey.
Exhibit A and B.
That's right.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me. Stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy. Yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh, well, guess beggars can't be choosy.
All right, I want to talk about Iwo Jima because I'm fascinated by it. Yeah. So this appeared in Stars and Stripes on Friday. Japan plans to develop a powerful ground-penetrating radar to help find World War II remains on Iwoto, which is what they call Iwo Jima. The radar's specifications are unknown because its development has not yet gone out to bid. However, officials hope it will be able to penetrate deeper than existing systems that can find objects with a diameter of about an inch as deep as 13 feet, or a 20-inch cavity as deep as 33 feet. Nearly $11.9 million has been allocated in fiscal year 2018 to excavation efforts on the island. And part of that money will help pay for the project. Quote, we would like to check the island thoroughly. The Japanese government needs to work together as one and proceed in order to discover uncollected remains. The radar's development is being led by the Ministry of Defense, the official said. The need for better radar became apparent after 1,798 unsuccessful shallow excavations on Iwo Toe between 2014 and 2017, officials said. Despite those failures, three anomalies were discovered near the island's runway on 2012 and 2013 using a radar provided by the Ministry of Defense. Last year, after excavating the site of one of the anomalies, two sets of human remains were found at a depth of about 52 feet, prompting the request for a higher performing radar. Officials said they hope to dig under the runway should more anomalies be detected by the new radar, but would hope to do so in a way that would not disrupt base activities. The runway is used by Japanese self-defense forces and the U.S. military during carrier landing drills. That runway goes right down the middle of the island where a lot of fighting took place. If you look at old imagery of the island, you can see where airfield number 1, 2, and 3 were, the beginnings of airfield number 3. If you look at the island as it exists today, you see one long runway throughout the island. The United States bore down on the island in February of 1945. Its 22,000 Japanese defender burrowed deep into the rock underground, creating a sprawling complex of tunnels and caverns, many of which still exist today. In the heavy fighting that followed, about 21,900 Japanese were killed. Officials say only 10,410 sets of their remains have been recovered. Of the approximately 70,000 Americans who participated in the 36-day battle, about 6,800 were killed. Of those, 151 American service members, mostly Marines, remain unaccounted for, according to Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Kenneth Hoffman. The Marines that stormed the island stronghold took two completed airfields and a third that was under construction, so finding American remains in the area of the runway is possible. If American remains are found, the information would be provided to DPAA, the Japanese official said. Quote, we are aware of this effort, and we are certainly interested in partnering with the Japanese. This is from that lieutenant colonel. On any technology that will support our mission, Hoffman wrote in a statement to Stars and Stripes. We are a small DOD agency with a global mission. So we're always looking for new ways to expand and augment our capacity. With our Japanese partners there throughout the year, we are able to leverage their resources and capabilities in hopes of recovering U.S. unaccounted for service personnel on Iwo Jima. Hoffman said a broader partnership with the Japanese government is under development that could include joint forensic reviews of recovered remains. The last American mission to the island to look for remains took place in 2007, about 600,000 Japanese soldiers and 57,000 American soldiers from World War II remain unaccounted for in the Indo-Pacific region. Pretty amazing, huh? Anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Now, the other thing I'm interested in, and I got interested last week when the results of a court-martial appeared United States Naval Institute, which publishes proceedings. They have a news site. And so I looked up the guy who's writing, Sam. His name is Sam Legron. He's the editor of USNI News. Has covered legislation, acquisition, and operations for the sea services since 2009. Has spent time underway with the U.S. Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Canadian Navy. Was he ever in the military? Evidently not. Anyway, so the article that I'm most interested in the collisions of the two ships. The two collisions are very different. One, you have the Fitzgerald at night, the CO asleep, the XO asleep, and it's going to transit a pretty busy international traffic line. The speed has been prescribed. They have degraded radars. People in Combat Information Center aren't paying attention. And you have a Lieutenant JG on the bridge, clearly over her head. So, as a surface warfare officer, okay, obviously wasn't up to the task. And so in reading about her corporal, first of all, the first thing that blew my mind was she was NJP'd. Okay. Now, for those of you that are the uninitiated, non-judicial punishment is for what I would call misdemeanors. Okay. Relatively small stuff. And what you do is you go to your commanding officer, and your commanding officer adjudicates it. When seven people get killed, to think that that's going to be an NJP-able offense is mind-blowing. Subsequent to her NJP, the Navy appointed an officer that is in charge of overseeing all these court-martials between the Fitzgerald, the McCain, so that you don't have this gross variance in the way people are treated. Now, I'll remind you that a Marine gunny was given 10 years when a recruit that he had hazed jumped off the third floor of a barracks at Parris Island. 10 years. Okay, so you're out and you're running the ship. Degraded radars. Now, just mind you, the radars were degraded. Hey, we've been sailing ships, right, without radar for how many years? Since we started, right? John Paul Jones and all that, he didn't have radar. They did all right. Radar is a relatively new thing. So my point is we know how to do that. We'd rather have the radar on, right? But I gave the example of in fact, General Neil and I were talking about it yesterday. He mentioned that, he's concerned that, the Marine Corps over-relies on technology. Said he was at a dinner with the commandant, blah, 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 blah. I mentioned to the commandant. The commandant said he thought they were making inroads to make sure people knew how to use compasses and stuff like that. You think? Okay. So when you're running something and your technology goes out, you go back to, what we used to do. And I gave the example. When this is in combat, shit's happening. You still have to medevac people. You still have to use supporting arms. And so in our combat operations center, what happens is you have these dishes that communicate, right? Those are your data links. When the wind blows and the dishes move, that's not a good thing. when the wind blows, the dishes move, and there's a lot of dust in the air that refracts that stuff, that's even worse yet. So what do you do? Do you not shoot? Do you not medevac because we can't talk with our computers? Our, you know, our phones don't work now because our phones use those same data lines? No, that's not the answer. The answer is you do it World War II style. VHF, HF radios, we have them. We can use them. We have maps hanging on the wall. We can use push pins in those maps. We can do all of that. And you practice to do that. So what I don't understand when I read this is, you know, that these systems were degraded. So, I mean, it should be pretty simple, you know. And again, my systems are degraded. I'm going to transit a pretty busy shipping lane, and the CO or the XO isn't on the bridge. Why is that? Is the navigator on the bridge? So is one of the adults on the bridge, or is it all going to be younger junior officers? Okay, there's the first mistake. Now, it's another thing if all the radars are operating and everything's, you know, hunky dory and, you know, you're pretty confident, then maybe. Even then, it's nice to have an adult in the area for that transit. But they didn't do that night. She got NJP'd. NJP'd. Then, after the admiral overseeing all of it, looks, says, yeah, she's going to get court-martialed. So she gets court-martialed. She gets fined a couple months, a third of a couple months' pay, which to me is pretty amazing. 7 sailors died because of her incompetence. 7 sailors died. And so to me, the message that gets sent is we'll understand. When the message that gets sent, and remember, the UCMJ is about maintaining good order and discipline. It's not about your rights. It's not a democracy. That exists outside the gate. What exists inside the gate is the American military. Justice's primary, military justice's primary concern, is good order and discipline. But that's, to me, not the message that got sent by the way the officer of the deck of the Fitzgerald was handled. And the message that got sent is, we'll understand your problems. So to me, McNamara is the officer of the deck. Okay? McNamara is a good officer. He keeps his head in the game. He's nobody's fool. He has standing orders to keep the ship at between 20 and 22 knots. And our radars are degraded. Okay? So the first thing he says is, calls down to the CIC and say, okay, look, you guys are monitoring tracks, yes? Yeah, we are. How are you doing that? Well, our radar is not. I'm going to tell you that the radar's out. The radar's not. So, you know, we're monitoring tracks, old school, right here on the plexiglass with pencils. We'll update it in the hand jam display, okay? And that's how we're doing it. So we've doubled the number of lookouts. Up in, quote-unquote, the crow's nest. Okay, I got it. All right, one other recommendation is that we slow the ship down during the transit. Now, we could speed up when we find a gap, right, and we decide we're going to go. But during the transit, as we approach, you know, probably be best to, you know, have our speed a little bit lower so that we can, you know, not be forced into something as we're doing this old school. Okay, got it. Wake the CO up and tell him. None of that happens. She doesn't know until, according to the article, 60 seconds before they collide that ship is there. How that happens on a clear night at sea is absolutely, positively, beyond me. And the other thing is that, look, with all the different thermal night vision stuff, you know, you can see those ships on the water, right? You can see those ships. And the article doesn't go into that. I've never seen an article in either one of these cases. And the McCain is different, okay? The McCain is the incompetence of the CO, clearly. He drives in front of another ship as he flails to control his own ship, right? The Fitzgerald, much different. The Fitzgerald drives in front of another ship, doesn't even know it's there until right before they hit. And even worse, doesn't sound a collision alarm, doesn't go to general quarters. If they would have, nobody would have got killed. Would have smashed the ship, but that's it. So anyway, so it's been interesting. So, okay, so that kind of sets, so I read those stories last week. So I click on this guy today, Sam Legrone. Maybe we'll see if we can get Sam on. Subsequent article. USS Fitzgerald combat team unaware of approaching merchant ship until seconds before fatal collision. I honestly, speechless. Absolutely, positively speechless when you read that. Lieutenant Natalie Combs, the tactical action officer, and Lieutenant Iran, it looks like Brian with an I, though, Iron Woodley, surface warfare coordinate. So that Natalie Combs, she's commanding the tactical, the CIC. This guy, there's different modules in there. There's the surface plot, which this guy would have been in charge of. Right, there's a subplot, which looks for submarines. There's the air plot, right, which looks for aviation assets. All different modules, okay, in there. She commands the whole thing. Both were on duty in the windowless combat information center in the belly of the guided missile destroyer early in the morning of June 17th as the ship moved southwest from the coast of Japan and less than a day out of port. Based on the interviews, the general consensus was it was a quiet night in CIC with four to five tracks and nothing within 10,000 yards, according to Rear Admiral Brian Fort. He's the lead investigator. He said this at their Article 32 hearing, which is essentially their grand jury hearing. Then shortly after crossing into a busy shipping channel, the merchant ship ACX Crystal popped up on the ship CIC commercial ship automatic identification system dangerously close to Fitzgerald. The container ship was bearing down on the warship, bow pointed towards the middle of the warship. Woodley ordered the camera used to spot targets for the ship's 5-inch guns towards the bearing of the Crystal. Fire Controlman Second Class Ashton Cato, who manned the camera, saw the flared bow of the ship fill up his monitor just seconds before the crash. Prosecutors argued that during Wednesday's hearing that the fact that Woodley and Combs did not know the ship was at risk from Crystal, did not see other nearby contacts, and were not in contact with the bridge crew was evidence of criminal negligence and hazarding a ship. During the course of the hearing, prosecutors called witnesses to outline the role of the sailors in the CIC, which was to assist the bridge watch in understanding the surface picture around the ship, to make the point that Woodley and Combs failed to live up to the standard. In combat, the tactical action officer fights the ship, coordinating attacks on air, subsurface, and surface. So they're essentially the senior watch officer in the combat operations center. Okay? But the role is different during peaceful transit. Quote, tactical action officer has other areas to focus on if they aren't worried about air or subsurface threat. They can truly focus on the surface picture, said retired Captain Bud Weeks, an instructor at the service's surface warfare officer school. He said CIC and the team on the bridge needed to be in constant communication to develop a good understanding of what's happening around the ship. However, that communication was non-existent during that night watch. Fitzgerald, officer of the deck, Lieutenant J.G. Sarah B. Kopic, admitted on Tuesday when she pled guilty to a single count of dereliction of duty as part of a plea deal in a special court-martial. And then there's a series of documents. I need to read those. Yeah, they're PDF documents. I'll just read charge 3, violation of Article 134, hazarding a ship. And it redacts her name. Did aboard the USS Fitzgerald on or about 17 June 2017 unlawfully cause the death of, and it lists everybody who was killed that night, by negligently failing to comply with USS Fitzgerald commanding officer standing orders and to ensure her watch team followed proper standing principles in the USS Fitzgerald Combat Information Center, as a result of which the said USS Fitzgerald collided with the ACX Crystal, and that said conduct was to the prejudice of good order and discipline in the armed forces, blah, 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 blah. While Kopic admitted that she should have talked with CIC during the watch, comma, she had low confidence in certain watch standards. Kopic did comment that she had received poor information from Woodley before. However, the ship's XO, the ship's executive officer, Commander Sean Babbitt, admitted to the Coast Guard during its safety investigation that he didn't completely trust Kopic, and that the inclusion of Woodley in the CIC was to provide backup for a bridge watch team he said wasn't the strongest. Then why in the hell are they up there, and why isn't the XO or the CO or the navigator up there when you're going to transit a shipping lane? Woodley and Kopic had very different pictures of what was happening around the ship, and it would have taken communication to reconcile the differences. While the bridge had almost 200 contacts on its radar, the CIC's radar had only a handful due to an overall poor radar picture operation. These are the OSs that work in CIC. Operation Specialist Second Class Matthew Stawicki said during the hearing. There was a lot of clutter, he said. Part of the reason the picture was muddy was the radar had been set to a long-range so-called long pulse mode, which made contacts close to the ship difficult to see. The setting couldn't be directly adjusted from CIC, and the investigation found there was no effort to contact the ship's electronics technicians to adjust the radar picture. They accepted the fact they had clutter, and they didn't do anything about it. It was the world in which they were living and the world that they accepted. But according to Fitzgerald's former combat systems officer, the circumstances of broken equipment and lapses in crew training were commonplace for a warship that was part of four deployed naval forces in Japan. Shows his statement. Lieutenant Commander Richara Fakwan, who reported aboard the Fitzgerald in 2014 and left the ship a few months before the collision, said deploying with missing crew, insufficient spares, or systems that didn't work under the direction of the U.S. Pacific Command was the norm. Well, no shit it is. You never go full up round. Quote, red line issues were a much bigger deal with U.S.-based ships. They weren't showstoppers in the 7th Fleet. We would find the body, find the part, or just make do. Sometimes I thought it was unsafe. But again, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a radar set on the wrong setting. And nobody's saying, oh, yeah, switch it to whatever mode. And let me tell you, I, in my career, I did this. Okay? When I was on sea duty, we were I used to sit in the Combat Information Center. And I had Marines manning guns when we got within 50 nautical miles of the Iranian coast. And so, and what did we do all night? We prosecuted the surface plot. All right? All right, we're identifying this ship. This is before the day of, you know, whatever. You know, and sometimes, you know, we're conducting flight ops. And so, you know, you have your own aircraft going out and identifying, what is it? It's a fishing boat, right? It's given a name. The track's given a name. It's identified. You track it, right? When it gets a certain distance, it drops off. But until then, you're tracking it. If it's going to come close to the ship, you're watching it. Is it steering away from the ship? Is it steering towards the ship? And then it begins to get your attention. You do that all night, every night. That's what the service plot is. To have a radar, if that's your job, to have a radar that's not set to the right setting, come on, man. During the hearing, the defense and prosecutors largely agreed on the facts of the collision, but were split on where to place the blame. Prosecutors said Combs and Woodley shared the blame with Executive Officer Babbitt and then ship's commander Bryce Benson, who faces his own Article 32 hearing on a similar charge later this month. Defense attorney said to look higher. The Fitz was a wreck of a ship, Combs' defense attorney said, David P. Sheldon. The blame, it lies with the Navy for putting its head in the sand and putting a ship at sea that wasn't ready. But the Navy wants only to hold these officers accountable. The hearing official will now craft a recommendation on how to proceed and provide it to Admiral James Caldwell, Director of Naval Reactors. Caldwell is the Consolidated Disposition Authority. So this is the guy who said she needs to be court-martialed. NJP for her, when seven sailors are dead, that ain't going to cut it. All right? He was appointed to oversee accountability actions related to both the Fitzgerald and the McCain. So anyway, pretty interesting stuff. And again, it's mind blowing, honestly, when you read it and you begin to put the pieces together in terms of they didn't know what the hell was going on. They didn't know what the hell was going on their own ship. Just another night hanging out in CIC. And so I guess to me, what blows my mind is it's no small thing on an American warship when you cross the shipping lane. It's a big deal. F-18 man has landed on Iwo Jima. Author Tom Wolfe has died. That in just now. Breaking news from the Associated Press. U.S. has designated, these are another couple of news flashes just hit my phone. The U.S. has designated the head of Iran's central bank as a terrorist. Accuses him of funneling millions to Hezbollah. All right. Another email. Hey Mac, where are you finding these articles? Go to USNI. Right. And go to usni.org and you'll find the website. And then go to news. All right. And then the other article that came out yesterday was a trial date has been set for the McCain CO, and it's senior enlisted sailor. The Fitzgerald CO waived his right to his grand jury and will go straight to court martial. So here's an update. former commander of the McCain and a senior enlisted crew member will face separate court-martials next week for their roles in the fatal collision that killed 10 sailors in August. Now, remember, the McCain is going through the Malaccan Straits and essentially turns in front of another ship. Because there's confusion on the bridge. The most senior, you know, boat drivers, the most senior navigators aren't on the bridge because the CO said, yeah, it's not necessary to set the sea and anchor detail yet. Commander Alfredo Sanchez will face a single charge of dereliction of duty in a special court-martial at the Washington Navy Yard. Okay, so just so you know, court-martials, three different kinds. General court-martial, the most serious. I don't know how this doesn't rate a general court-martial. All right? Special court-martial is a step down from that. And then summary court-martial, a step down from that. Okay? So when you look at felonies, right, so non-judicial punishment where you go see your CO, that's for misdemeanors. When you look at felonies and worse things and bad stuff, you're looking at court-martial. So there's three varieties. He will face not the most severe, which it blows me away. Remember, Gunny got 10 years for hazing, causing the death of a single Marine, or contributing to the circumstances surrounding the death of a single Marine. 10 years. Right? The officer of the deck of an American warship, and again, and this email kind of says it, Mac, how in God's name, if you have anybody on the exterior of the ship who's looking, do you not see a ship? You know what? Again, that's what I haven't seen. Was there anybody on the outside of the ship with a pair of binoculars? Don't we do that? Or is that kind of, it's kind of bullshit? Evidently, it's not. Especially when you're going through a shipping lane. Well, maybe not ever. Right? Chief Bosun's mate, Jeffrey Butler, will appear before a summary court-martial for a similar charge. The Navy would not provide the charging documents for Sanchez and Butler when contacted by USNI News on Monday. Sanchez had faced more serious charges that included negligent homicide and hazarding a vessel earlier this year, according to a January statement from the service. The trials will be the latest actions overseen by Admiral James Caldwell. Again, he's the director of the Consolidated Disposition Authority. Okay, then. The article kind of reviews the stuff relative to the McCain court-martials. So it's kind of interesting. Last week, Lieutenant J.G. Sarah Kopic pleaded guilty to similar charges facing Sanchez in her role in the June Fitzgerald collision. Kopic was sentenced to a relatively light punishment of 3 months reduction, 3 months reduced pay, and given a punitive letter of reprimand. Remember, 7 sailors died in that. So no matter what anybody else's role, she was the officer of the deck. She was in charge of driving the ship. And when you're confused and you don't put your hand up, you're culpable. The article goes on. A military criminal defense lawyer said the reduction in charges and the nature of the court-martial for defendants like Kopic and Sanchez indicate defendants are reaching agreements to face lesser charges as part of a round of plea agreements. Oh, man. Sounds like we're in Deal City, said Eugene Fiddle, who teaches military justice at the Yale School of Law. Quote, it may be they're having buyer's remorse on taking a hard line on these cases in the first place. There were fatalities, but these cases may be difficult to turn into criminal proceedings. Okay. But is that all you get is a reduction in pay? I guess that's what the lieutenant colonel got at Paris Island, right? The gunny went to jail for 10 years. The lieutenant colonel got a reduction in payment, was allowed to retire. In the same announcement, the Navy said former Fitzgerald Commander Bryce Benson had waived his right for an Article 32 preliminary hearing, including dereliction of duty, hazarding a vessel, and negligent homicide. Quote, updates on future hearings related to this case will be provided by as they become available, the Navy said in its own statement. And then more actions are pending, right? In the two officers that we talked about previously, Lieutenant Natalie Combs, Lieutenant Iron Woodley, two, it says junior officers, but they were both they're both Navy lieutenants. That's captains in the Marine Corps. Okay? So that means if they're surface warfare officers, they've been on ships for, I don't know, somewhere between 4 and 8 years. So when they say junior officers, kind of bullshit. Yeah, they're company grade officers, but they're not, these guys are senior in that whole genre of officers. They will face court martials on charges of dereliction of duty, hazarding a vessel, and negligent homicide. I don't know how they get charged and the officer of the deck doesn't. In addition to the criminal charges, the Navy has issued 18 non-judicial punishments to sailors involved in the incidents, 10 for the Fitzgerald and 8 for the McCain. I got to get him on the program. Because I don't understand. Is there nobody on the exterior of the Fitzgerald that is there? What were they doing? What were all these people doing? I don't understand it. Especially if you're, again, it's not like you're out in the middle of nowhere, bobbing around the middle of the sea. You're gonna transit a shipping lane. That's a big deal. That's like running across the freeway. Yeah, Matt, but we're going to run across the freeway at 3 in the morning. Okay. We're still running across the freeway, yes. Okay. So maybe in our drunken stupor, this might not be the right thing to do. Why don't we walk that extra half mile down to the overpass and we'll just walk over? Nah, Mac, don't be a dumbass. So anyway. So, yeah. Navy justice at work here, and I need to delve into it because I don't understand it. I don't understand how when you're the officer of the deck and your radars are degraded or whatnot, you don't know that? And if your combat information center isn't talking to you, what are you doing? You're just operating without it? Maybe that's the way you do it. That's not the way you're supposed to do it, though. And I guess we're all learning a lesson again, which is stupid, right? General Mattis had this saying, brilliant in the basics. Got to be able to block, got to be able to tackle, okay? Got to be able to do the basics, and you got to be great at it. But what I don't understand is when you're not, right? Then, sorry, but you're going to become an example for everybody else. Right? You're going to be part of the example. Anyway, I don't get it. Real quick, we'll go over some Marine Corps headlines and then, you'll hear General Butch Neal. So, looking forward to that. So we'll go to Marine Corps Times. We'll do the early bird. We'll check Stars and Stripes real quick. The website's called usni.org. United States Naval Institute. They publish proceedings, if you're familiar with that publication. under fake news. CBS has fulfilled their role perfectly. Yeah, I didn't see what CBS did. But again, I just, it was really interesting to be essentially a novice and to go to Ramadi in 2004 and to see the different things that you saw and then try to make them make sense. And pretty soon you understood that they watched everything you did, right? That if something happened in front of you, it's because they wanted it to happen in front of you, because they were shaping your view of what life was. Yeah. And if you, and so what you had to come to, and I'll never forget this, is that you had to come to the conclusion that nothing is as it seems here. There's always other forces at work. And so you look at this choreographed event in the Gaza on the day that the United States opens its embassy in Jerusalem. Okay, so we're still fighting, right, the United Nations Act that created Israel and made Israel a sovereign nation, giving them a piece of land in, what, 1948? I think so, because Israel just celebrated, what, its 70th birthday? So, yeah, I think it's 1948. So we're still fighting that. They don't have a right. They don't have a right, even though it is their country, to make Jerusalem their capital. They don't have that right. Bullshit, man. And the only thing by nations, you know, bowing to Hamas, the only thing you do, again, through weakness, is you encourage that behavior. You encourage that behavior. So anyway, so it is pathetic. It is pathetic. But again, don't think the news business is is about the truth, right? It's about money. Okay, so we all have to flush, those of us that are old enough to remember, we all have to flush Walter Cronkite out of our heads. David Brinkley, Chet Huntley, remember those guys? Tim Russert, flush them all. It's now about money. It's now about money. So, right? Am I gonna give the narrative today? In my opinion, that is the truth. This is deliberately organized by Hamas on a day, you know, that they wanted to make a statement. Deliberately organized. Make no mistake about it. So, anyway, all right. Interesting. Marine Corps Times. Military Times editor, Marine Corps Times is part of Military Times, to receive Leadership in Journalism Award from a war veterans group. And his name is Leo Shane. So, congratulations to them. Next story. Marines bolster security across the Middle East as U.S. opens embassy in Jerusalem. Marine Corps officials would not detail how many Marines were sent or to what locations, but stated that Marines were part of the Marine Security Guard and Security Augmentation Unit. So, no surprise. The Marine Corps unveiled stand by, all you pilots. Okay, all you pilots, you're getting put out of business, right? You know you're getting put out of business. I'm looking, the Marine Corps unveiled its new unmanned aircraft system badges authorized for wear for both enlisted and officers who operate the Corps' drone aircraft. Okay, so for a long time, these our drone operators had to roll around slick. They don't wear their wings. Okay? If you can imagine such a case. You would have to roll around slick just like you were a normal Marine. Yeah. Why do they need to wear their wings? Why did they have to wear some antique version to let everybody know, hey, dig me, I'm a pilot? Oh, whoa. Why is that? We don't know. I don't know why. That, you know, why? And it's given rise to this whole cult, right? But anyway, Marines holding the 7314 and the 7315 job fields are authorized to wear the new breast insignia. Commandant approved it on November 27th of last year. The Marine Corps plans to hold its first winging ceremony this Friday. So, yeah. So I don't know what normal wings look like, but this has like a little V in that center shield. Yeah. So the Marine Corps officer breast insignia for unmanned aircraft system operators. The Marine Corps breast insignia for unmanned aircraft system operators. And the picture's different. So I'm confused. Because the two pictures I'm seeing, they're different. One is, you know, the circle that had the air traffic controller wings? One has that. The other one has a shield. Yeah, so the pictures are different. So I'll have to get to the bottom of that story. Trust me. I'll be burning the midnight oil to find out which set of wings those jackasses get to wear. All right, other news. Any new special forces stupidity going on? No. Let's see. All right. Not a whole lot that I want to talk about in Marine Corps times. Mac, where did you see the Iwo Jima stuff? In Stars and Stripes? Stars and Stripes, I'm telling you, if you don't glance at it on a daily basis, all right, you probably are missing a pretty decent story. Top five stories. One, European spy chiefs warn of hybrid threats from Russia and ISIS. Disinformation, cyber attack, and also traditional means of espionage. Two, that's from the Associated Press. Two, long-awaited OCP uniform is on its way to the Air Force. What is the OCP? I'm going to tell you. You probably thought that to yourself. The wait is over. OCP is here. What's OCP? It's got to be good. If it involves the Air Force, you know it's going to be awesome. For years, airmen have dreamed of it, demanded it, and then those lucky enough to have it already. Now, finally, the operational camouflage pattern uniform is on its way for everybody. The Air Force announced Monday it is adopting the Army's OCP as its official utility uniform. The uniform will roll out across the forces over the next 3 years. While some airmen already wear the OCP, such as airmen in the Middle East and Air Force Global Strike Command Security Forces, the Air Force will start rolling out it out to others beginning on October 1. That's right. That's the Army's camouflage pattern. Not their digital stuff. Okay? Not the digital stuff. So, the Air Force, you know, for instance, why hasn't the Air Force always worn what the Army's worn? Why do they need to be different? And why doesn't the Navy wear what the Marine Corps wears? Why does the Navy have to have its own camouflage pattern? We're part of the same house. We do camouflage. Besides, our shit is tight. If you look at our digital uniforms, they're tight. If you look at our, there is no cooler uniform, and everybody knows it. There's no cooler uniform than the Marine Corps' Desert MARPAT. Everybody knows that, too. to include, if you look at the camouflage that Major League Baseball and the NFL use, guess what it is? Sorry about that. Marine Corps stuff, man. We want to know why? Our shit's tight. Our whole uniform set is tight. And we wear a belt. That's right. We wear a belt. Because we're not a bunch of fat asses. We got some fat people, but we make fun of them and we haze them. Whoa, did I say haze? I didn't mean that. We don't haze them. We just give them a tough time. All right? Yeah, husky. Even if you're husky, we haze them too. Yeah, because you got to get into the belt, man. You got to get the belt. All right, so that's in the news today. Three Marines bolster security across the Middle East as U.S. Embassy opens in Jerusalem. All right, and then this is in Stars and Stripes. Have you heard about it? No. Marine Corps announces sweeping changes to ground combat forces. Okay. So it'll change almost every level. We'll get to that in a second. Five, costly helicopter rides for U.S. officials show Afghanistan security decline. So this is a topic. I don't know, again, what's the metric? I don't know what we're talking about. Okay. Ernest Medina, key figure in the My Lai massacre, dies at the age of 81. And I don't know what to say. He ruined a lot of people's lives with the orders that he gave relative to My Lai. And I don't know what else to say. Those soldiers that were young and didn't know a whole lot and were new to combat, the orders that they followed and he gave when they went into a village to kill everybody, and they wound up killing hundreds of Vietnamese civilians, somewhere, estimates between 400 and 500. The whole keep your honor clean, why you do it, you don't do it for the Army, you don't do it for the Marine Corps, you do it for yourself. Those poor sons of bitches, they've lived in hell since then. And he has passed away at the age of 81. Story I wanted to get to in Army Times. Want a genuine U.S. military surplus 1911? I don't know that you want one of these. And let me tell you why. Because they're shot to shit, man. They are shot to death. All right. The wait is over. The Civilian Marksmanship Program last year announced it would sell 10,000 of the legendary pistols that have been in the Army, that have been in Army stocks for decades. But the number has dropped to 8,000 for this year as of a recent posting by the Civilian Marksmanship Program. This is not all of the 8,000 to be made available, but will be up for purchase to those select few who were given the go-ahead. Instead, some have been deemed unusual and worthy of being auctioned. Whoa. I wonder how you get a 45 that's worthy of being auctioned. We cannot emphasize enough that details really matter here, gun fans. To get one of the pieces of the U.S. military history, you have to fill out the order documents posted on June 4th at the CMP website. If you have questions on the date and only beginning on the date, you can call phone number or send an email. Forms must be postmarked between September 4th and October 4th. Only one form per person is allowed. You must be a U.S. citizen, a member of the CMP, a member of a CMP-affiliated club, and provide proof of participation in a marksmanship activity. The CMP 1911 must be transferred through a federal firearms license dealer with a complete purchaser background check. They will be drawn randomly. The pricing is as follows and includes shipping, just so you know. Service grade, $1,050. Holy shit. Pistol may exhibit minor pitting and wear on exterior surfaces and friction surfaces. Grips are complete with no cracks. Pistol is in issuable condition. That's a grand. Fuel grade for $950. Pistol may exhibit minor rust. What? Pitting and wear on exterior surfaces and friction surfaces. Grips are complete with no cracks. Pistol is in issuable condition. Rack grade, $850. Pistol will exhibit rust, pitting, and wear on exterior surfaces and friction surfaces. Grips may be incomplete and exhibit cracks. Pistol requires minor work to return to issuable condition. You can get that for $850. Auction grade. The condition of the auction grade pistol will be described when posted for auction. If you've already bought one from CMP, you're not allowed to purchase an auction 1911. No repeat purchasers will be allowed. That's pretty expensive. What's a new one cost? Yeah, why not? Oh, you're a collector. You want an old one. Yeah, let me tell you, when I remember shooting with them, I think at the basic school and then out in the fleet, because we carried them, you'd have to, like, they shot everywhere. You know, you'd point center mass. So on day one, when you're trying to BZO your weapon, you'd I'm not even close to, yeah, whatever my time was, screw that, man. I'm not even close to it. Screw that, Mac. I got a 1911 Ruger for $800. They would shame those worn out pieces. No thanks. It's you're being a collector, okay? It's you're being a collector. And it shows, the picture shows, Navy officers firing off the fantail. I used to do that. We'd throw garbage in the water. Marine detachment, go out and blast the shit out of it. Somebody shooting a shotgun. Some officer. Somebody else. They got a lot of hearing protection on. Hearing protection, come on. Real shooters don't wear hearing protection. I know they do, I'm just joking. And then another guy shooting a 45. Here's how you can get it. $800 for a piece of junk? Come on, man. What's up with that? All right. So that going on. The Air Force, how fired up are they to get the Army's utilities? Yeah, they don't look like goofballs anymore. They don't look like goofy Air Force people. They look like part of the team. Hey, you're on the team, man. Cool. We don't have to wear these goofy Air Force. But, come on, have you ever seen a worse uniform than the Navy's blueberry uniforms? Who in their right mind thought that was... that was a good idea. Think about that. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, like, okay, everybody shut your eyes. So you shut your eyes. Like, don't open your eyes. And no peeking. Like, all right. As soon as they say no peeking, I'm peeking straight up. General McNamara, quit peeking. Sorry, that's what I do. I'm a peeker. What can I say? So... as I'm peeking, I see the blueberries come in. My hand comes off my face. I'm like, no way. Turn them around. Get them out of here. All right? What in God's name is that uniform for? So if somebody goes in the water, we can't find them? No, sir. Well, what is it for? What is the purpose of the blueberries? Sir, it's a distinctive naval service uniform. It identifies us, and that's how we want to be seen in public. Wait a minute. You want to be seen in public in that uniform? Right. Maybe on Halloween, but certainly not as a professional. It looks ridiculous. Yeah, but hold on. Before you get too judgmental, sir, we're going to have gold rank insignia on it. Like, I don't care if you have chartreuse rank insignia on it. That looks like shit. Do not get that out. Get out of here right now. Yes. I'd be an admiral. I wouldn't be a general. Yes, admiral. Yeah, in God's name, who approved that shit? Right? Come on, man. Yeah, that's part of the come on, man. That's what the judge said to Mueller, what, week before last? Come on, man. As they say on the NFL, come on, man. Tell me those guys that do, Tom Jackson and those guys that did that, who, what, Keyshawn Johnson, that did the come on, man thing? I don't know who did it, but tell me they didn't laugh their ass off when they heard a judge, a federal judge, say that in court. Come on, man. I would say that with the blueberries. And congratulations to the Air Force. You don't have to walk around in those lame-ass looking Air Force camouflage bullshit uniforms. And everybody in the Navy, why just adopt the Marine Corps shit, man? Remember? We're a department of the Navy. Yeah. Men's department. Yeah, one of the great, great pieces of humor, Marine Corps style. Hey, you know you're part of the Department of Navy. Yeah, we know. Do you know what department we are? It's always awesome when they've never heard it. Whoa, no, what? We're the men's department. Boom! That gets nothing but rave reviews. When you see it happen live, it's hilarious. Right? Lance Corporal humor. Okay, here's Marine Corps announces sweeping changes to ground forces combat. To ground combat forces. All right, this is on the heels of the Sea Dragon 2025 and Marine Corps Force 2025. The number of Marines in a rifle squad decreased by 1 to 12. We've talked about that. The services will also add more automatic weapons, drones, and all-terrain vehicles while improving night optics, grenade launchers, and shoulder-fire rockets. Marine Corps fast-tracking some changes, but others will be phased in over the next 3 to 5 years. Some of the changes that are being made are fundamental makeup to the Marines' smallest ground units, the squad. So we've talked about that. There's also a gallery of images. Here's a drone. Yeah, there's drones dropping tear gas yesterday in Israel, in Gaza. All right. So, and it essentially talks about the battlefield, sniper rifles, all the stuff we've talked about. So Stars and Stripes, I'm sorry. I extol their virtue. Little late to the party on this article, boys and girls. It was news a couple weeks ago. Lock and Heath Rescue Squadron makes final flight in move to Aviano. The 56th and 57th Rescue Squadron's home at RAF Lock and Heath, nicknamed the Valley of the Jolly Green Giants, is now empty. Its squads have taken their final flight to a new base of operations in Italy. Congratulations to them. Italy as a base? Nice. Nice. Afghan forces, U.S. air power, repelled Taliban attack on provincial capital in the Nimroz province, all right, which is in western Afghanistan. The Taliban retreated from the capital of Western Farah province Tuesday after launching a pre-dawn assault on the city that killed and wounded several Afghan troops. U.S. firepower supported government forces there. Experts, I saw this article, but I didn't really read it. I'll read it with you because I care. Okay. Experts think they've finally solved the mystery of the doomed Malaysian Airlines flight. Now, I saw this. I didn't see a whole lot of traction on it. Oh, my God. Stars and Stripes. How did I read the other article? Yeah, Stars and Stripes, they only give you so many looks before they put the kibosh down, like the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal is expensive, too, by the way, in case you don't know. It's a great... Are you going to watch the Prince Harry, what's her name? Meghan Markle? She's from L.A. Yeah, what's up? Yeah, they're getting married. By all accounts, he's a cool guy. He was in Afghanistan when we were there. Yeah, you never heard shit about him. Call sign, Wales. That's a cool call sign. Wales, what do you mean? Yeah, as in Prince of Wales. Hello. Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, that. Yeah, but no, you know what? I think two things specifically speak well of those two princes. And I'm not a big Prince guy. You know? I'm not a Prince guy. So, one is they were on television recently in the United Kingdom talking about mental health and what they've been through after the death of their mother. You know? And so, in a very public way, losing their mother, having to walk behind her casket, drawn through the streets of London in front of God and everybody. I mean, little kid stuff, right? And, you know, and Harry, both of them served in the military. Harry, the younger one, was an infantry officer in Iraq. And then they said, yeah, he got to get out of here because they know he's here and they're looking for him. So he's putting other people's lives in danger. So he was there for a while and then he went home. And so he still wanted to serve. So they said, okay, well, look, we'll make you a pilot. So it became a kind of a Cobra pilot. They fly a version of the Cobra, the Apache. Yeah, I think he flew the Apache or the Brit version of the Apache. It might be the Apache. And he was in Afghanistan flying that, which I think speaks well to him as a young man. Wanted to serve, wanted to fight. Awesome. So, but he's come home and not only speaking out about mental health, which I'm sure wasn't easy for him, but he's also been huge in the Invictus Games, right? He's the founder of it. And so he every year when they have it, he presides over it. And I think that says great things about him and very, very cool. Anyway, back to probably not gonna watch the wedding though. I'm not gonna lie to you. Even though Meghan Markle's from L.A., yeah, boom. All but one of the 239 people on the doomed Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 had probably been unconscious, incapacitated by the sudden depressurization of the Boeing 777, and had no way of knowing that they were on an hours-long meandering path to their death. Along the path, a panel of aviation experts said Sunday was a brief but telling detour near Penang, Malaysia, the hometown of Captain Zahri Ahmad Shah. On two occasions, whoever was in control of the plane and was probably the only one awake tipped the aircraft to the left. Experts believe Zahari, the plane's pilot, was taking a final look. That is the chilling theory that the team of analysts assembled by Australia's 60 Minutes have postulated about the final hours of MH370. They suspect that the plane's 2014 disappearance and apparent crash was a suicide by the 50-year-old Zahari and a premeditated act of mass murder. But first, the experts said they believe Zahari depressurized the plane, knocking out everyone aboard who wasn't wearing an oxygen mask. That would explain the silence from the plane as it veered wildly off course. No mayday from the aircraft's radio, no final goodbye text, no attempted emergency calls that failed to connect. That would also explain how whoever was in control had time to maneuver the plane to its final location. The wreckage has not been found, though hundreds of millions of dollars have gone into the four-year search. The secret of what happened in the final moments of the ill-fated flight and the motive behind it all probably died with its passengers and pilot. But this quote-unquote 60 Minutes team, which included aviation specialists, the former Australian Transport Safety Bureau chief in charge of investigating MH370's crash, and an oceanographer, put forth what they believe to be is the most likely theory. Wow. The thing that gets discussed the most is that at the point where the pilot turned the transponder off, that he depressurized the airplane, which could disable the passenger, said Larry Vance, a veteran aircraft investigator from Canada. He was killing himself. Unfortunately, he was killing everyone else on board, and he did it deliberately. Zahiri's suspected suicide might explain an oddity about the plane's final flight path, that unexpected turn to the left. Captain Zahiri dipped his wings to see Penang, his hometown, said Simon Hardy, a Boeing 777 senior pilot and instructor. Quote, if you look very carefully, you can see it's actually a turn to the left and then start a long turn to the right, and then he does another left turn. So I spent a long time thinking about what this could be. What technical reason is there for this? And after 2 months, three months thinking about this, I finally got the answer. Someone was looking out the window. It might be a long emotional goodbye, Hardy added, or a short emotional goodbye to his hometown. Flight 370 disappeared in March of 2014, shortly after leaving Kuala Lumpur with 239 people aboard who believed they were bound for Beijing. The craft is thought to have crashed in the far south Indian Ocean. The governments of Malaysia, China, Australia called off the search in January of 2017. The Australian Transport Safety Bureau final report said the authorities were no closer to knowing the reasons for the plane disappearance or the exact location of the wreckage. But the 60 Minutes expert tried to explain one of the biggest questions surrounding the flight. How could a modern aircraft tracked by radar and satellites simply disappear? Because, they say, Zahiri wanted it to. And the veteran pilot, who had nearly 20,000 hours of flight experience and had built a flight simulator in his home, knew exactly how to do it. For example, at one point, he flew near the border of Malaysia and Thailand, crisscrossing into the airspace of both, Hardy said. But neither country was likely to see the plane as a threat because it was on the edge of their airspace. Both the controllers aren't bothered about this mysterious aircraft because, oh, it's gone. It's not in our airspace anymore. If you are commissioning me to do this operation and try to make a 777 disappear, I would do the same thing. As far as I'm concerned, it's very accurate flying, and it did the job. Still, as news.com.au, Australian News, wrote, the experts' hypotheses are just theories and not entirely new ones. Zahiri and co-pilot Farik Abdul Hamid were both suspects in the plane's disappearance from the beginning. There were rumors that Zahiri's marriage was ending and that he downed the plane after learning that his wife was about to leave, the news site had said. Another theory was that he hijacked the plane in protest of jailing of Anwar Ibrahim, who was then the opposition leader in Malaysia. A group called the Chinese Martyrs Brigade claimed responsibility for the downing, although skeptics called that a hoax. The wreckage, of course, might provide some insight about what caused the airplane to crash, and crews were still looking for it as recently as this year. The latest attempt to discover it was a $70 million effort by a Texas company called Ocean Infinity, according to the Associated Press. The mission scanned 500 square miles a day during a three-month search. Ocean Infinity CEO Oliver Plunkett said the company's technology had performed exceptionally well and collected significant amounts of high-quality data. Still, it found no traces of MH370. Interesting. Interesting. All right, we'll take a break. Butch Neal coming up next. As we continue on a Tuesday, more Ball Marine Radio. Next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.